Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
And good evening. 806 on KMOX. We are at your service tonight. Yes, this is that spot where you would think you would find a Cardinal game tonight. You will not. They have the night off. Is it good news you're not finding a Cardinal game here? Considering the last 4 days, possibly. Good evening. My name is George Sells. I'll be with you all the way through until 11 o'clock tonight. We'll be talking about the Muni in the next hour. We'll be talking about the insanely high prices for steaks and burgers all of a sudden. Get into that later on this hour. And the kinds of changes we're seeing in the places we go with COVID-19 restrictions and just the way people have changed how they're doing things. We'll talk about what's going to stay and what's going to go. But we start off in the spirit of having the Cardinals as this normal slot. We're going to start off with Rick Hummel from the Post-Dispatch, the Hall of Fame baseball writer. Talking about a team that hasn't exactly been putting a Hall of Fame performance on the field lately. Rick, how are you tonight?
I'm fine, George. How are you?
Doing very well. Very well indeed. Rick, I have been watching social media, and you would think that you could walk down Market Street and see people jumping from the buildings after these last 4 days. Do people need to panic yet, or do they need to just calm down a little bit? Where are we right now?
Well, there's 102 games to go, I think, is the first thing to look at here. are there some problems? Yes. The pitching is, they've got three guys hurt. They've got two regulars hurt in DeJong and Bader, with Rhea, with Molina out too, but he's just out temporarily here. So they're not at their strongest. They do have to win some games here pretty soon. The schedule takes a big turn for them later this month. They play like 24 games in a row against losing teams. So although people will say, well, the Reds were a losing team, and they'd be right. Then they just lost four to them. But there's a way that things will look up a little bit. But they're in a mode that's puzzling to a degree, because some of these games they played this weekend, they actually played very well defensively. They didn't hit as well in the clutch as they needed to, and they didn't pitch as well as they needed to, clearly, but it isn't like they were just half-stepping out there. They made some wonderful plays in the field. I can rarely recall seeing a team lose four games in a row and play as clean a game as they played. They just lost.
So kind of a sign of hope there. This whole season has been a little bit strange after last season being a lot strange. You are the guy we turn to who has seen it all, but you'd never seen anything like COVID-19. What has this last season and a half, or season and a quarter, I guess you'd call it, been like for you in trying to cover this team with all of these different rules and restrictions?
Well, it's a lot harder. I mean, we're just now starting to get some access. Like tomorrow, we'll be able to go onto the field before the game, which is a major step, I guess. We've been able to interview players through the screen a little bit before batting practice ends, but no clubhouse access, and probably not for the rest of the season, I wouldn't think. No dugout access. So it's harder, and you get your Zooms, and the clubs have been diligent about setting them up and pretty good about getting the players you want in there every night, every day. But there's not much room for creativity when everybody's getting the same information. You're going to have to be a little faster on your feet trying to get some stuff that other people don't regularly have. And so it's a little harder to cover, and it's not quite the same, but it's getting better. on at least a weekly basis here, and maybe by the end of the season we'll have a little more normalcy as far as what we do relative to what they do.
It's got to be challenging for you, going back to the first thing we were talking about. Do they need to, you know, find a free agent here or a trade there? It's got to be a lot tougher for you to have a sense of that when you don't have that, you know, one-on-one interaction, the, you know, stop and chat in the hall kind of thing that you do in most seasons.
Well, the best part about being in the clubhouse is you can kind of pick who you want to talk to and almost when you want to talk to them. They're all going to be in there at some point. And I'd like to go over and talk to somebody that no one else is talking to right now, because there's always something I can ask him about that'll pertain to something I might want to write about. And you don't have that access at all on the field. I'd be anxious to see how that goes tomorrow and forward, because there's going to be a lot of people down there, and the players are not obligated to cooperate with this new format. So they might say, I don't have any time right now. And they might be right. They might be working on something or got some film to watch or whatever, so, or just don't want to do it. So we'll see. But it's not exactly a bold new world, but it's been a new world. And it's been hard on everybody, but it was harder on the players and the teams last year, especially the teams like the Cardinals, who had 17 guys or 14 guys or whatever, and they missed 17 days with the coronavirus, and they had to play all those doubleheaders, and that was a rough season. And I think the thing to look for now is that we're at 60 games, which is all the teams played last year. So we'll see what the conditioning is like, how the pitchers' arms hold up for the next 102 games that they didn't have to play last year.
I was going to ask if injuries are a worry. Injuries already have been a worry for the Cardinals, but some of them, you know, Harrison Bader breaking his rib falling on a baseball could have happened at any point. But do you think are the Cardinals any better off or worse off than anybody else in the league right now? Or are the other teams starting to see the same kind of nagging things more so maybe than they normally would because of what you're talking about, that 60-game season last year?
Well, the Cardinals, like you say, having some of the things that they have had are not nagging. You had one guy hitting the ribs by a pitch and DeJong and Bader falling on a baseball. But then Kim had back tightness. Flaherty hurt his oblique. Either he was swinging a bat, but he may have hurt it throwing a pitch before that. Michaelis hurt his arm throwing a pitch. So you're going to see it. You've seen a lot of that stuff already, and you're going to see more of it. And you're going to see, I think, higher scoring games from here on out, because the pitchers are not going to have the same, you know, across the board, the same endurance and stamina for 162 game season that they had for 60.
In our last 20 seconds or so, is this still a playoff team in your eyes?
I thought so before the season, and they're only 2.5 games out, and they could not have had a worse week than they've just had. And they didn't drop out of sight. It isn't like they're 18 and 48. They're 31 and 29. So, yeah, I think by the end of the month, they could be in first place again, given the schedule they have and the fact they're going to get some injured guys back gradually. And they're just going to play better. Yesterday's loss was a game that they could have been hammered, and they ended up tying the game and had a chance to win it. So it wasn't a bad loss, not as bad as some of the other ones before that.
Rick Hummel, thank you so much for joining us. And you heard it here first, folks. You can get off of those ledges and take a smile to your face. We have a chance still. Rick, thanks again.
You bet, George.
KMOX News Time is 8:13.
Earning St. Louis's trust for 96 years, this is KMOX.
Monday night at your service here on KMOX. Are you looking forward to the Muni? It is back. Who would have thought it? The Muni is going to finally have full capacity this summer, something even a few months ago we weren't sure was going to happen. Managing Director Kwafi Coleman is joining me now on the live line. Kwafi, good evening. How are you?
I'm doing well, George. How are you doing?
Doing great. First of all, let's just get to the change in plans and how you guys got to that point that you felt comfortable with a full capacity.
Well, gosh, George, it's been the same kind of process everyone's been going through, watching vaccination rates go up, watching new cases of COVID go down, seeing what other venues and other events and places are doing as far as their capacity. So we kept, and, you know, overall kept working with the city, CDC guidance. So a bunch of factors went in, and we were looking at, obviously, that delayed start that we scheduled for July 26th puts us out in the future a bit, and And we really felt with all the mitigation efforts and truly the health landscape improving that we'd be in the right spot, and got the talk to the city again one more time. And they felt like we would be in the right spot there by July 26th to go full capacity.
I would assume some things will look different. What will we see that maybe won't be quite the same?
Sure. I mean, it's a little bit of the entrance procedures are kind of made to speed up a little bit, keep the same safety, but faster security checkpoints with the rapid ingress for those metal detectors. There'll be a little bit of difference with the food and beverage, a little bit more prepackaged food. This year, we won't have the pre-show Culver Pavilion. That's something that we'll bring back next year. It's one of those things that if you don't plan for really far in advance, it's hard to make that quick turn. But otherwise, you know, look, at the end of the day, people come out to the theater for a couple of main things. They come out for an opportunity to be together, to see some exceptional shows on stage, and that's going to be the same. And we're really excited about that.
What have ticket sales looked like so far? I'm sure you were kind of apprehensive just because we're really jumping into the unknown here. What have ticket sales been like? What kind of responses have you been getting from folks?
George, it's been really encouraging. So we actually started renewing our season ticket holders, our subscribers, back in January, so just the beginning of this year. And the renewal rates have been really high. New sales, interest in new sales and new tickets has been really, really positive. So, you know, it's one of those actually just quantifiable measures to see what the appetite is for the public to come back to venues like this. It was really encouraging. Of course, we look at, you know, some of our partners, we look at the Cardinals, the Blues, all the things that have been open or still are open. And to see a positive response there says that folks are ready to safely get back to life.
Do you find yourself communicating with other venues, both around the country and here in St. Louis? You mentioned the Cardinals and the Blues, just kind of talking through what their procedures have been and how they've gotten through it and had some success. Are you talking to those folks?
Absolutely. There's no competition in a moment like this. You know, everybody, we're talking to each other to see best practices. Look, we all want to get back to business, bring people back to work in the safest way possible. So it's been a constant communication with places that are already open. Like I said, the Cardinals or the Blues are places that plan to open a little bit later locally. And then, you know, between our board and our leadership, we are involved in a lot of national conversations as well to make sure, you know, at the end of the day, like I said, everyone has the same goal, no matter what industry you're in that brings people together. We have the same goal of doing it effectively and safely. So that communication has been really encouraging.
What has the impact of all this been on the shows you're bringing in? Obviously, Broadway's been dark. You have a lot of actors who come from New York and other places, of course, to do the Muni every summer. How are the shows being impacted by this? As far are they getting a line of people at the door begging them to let them in the show, or are they having trouble with some people who feel less or more comfortable going out of town from where they live?
That's a good question, George. You know, the most obvious impact, number one, is that we needed to have a later start to make sure we were in the best standpoint from a health perspective and getting the facility prepared. So there are two shows we had planned for this season, Mary Poppins and Sweeney Todd, which will both go into the 2022 season. So that's probably the most obvious effect, is that there are a couple of shows that moved yet another year. As far as comfort and whatnot, you know, that's up to each individual. What we have found is that there's a lot of guidance from the different bodies that govern, you know, Actors Equity Association, for example, for the actors or musicians or whatnot. All those groups as well have offered some guidance, and our job is to create an environment that satisfies science and satisfies all of those. So what we again are seeing is that there's an eagerness on the other side of the stage, on the work side of the stage, I should say, to come back to work. You know, those are people that this industry has been decimated by this past year to 15 months. So the ability to safely come back to work, you know, helps feed families and put money back in their pocket, but also allows people to get back to a livelihood that they truly love.
I was going to say, have you talked to the producers of any of these shows yet? They've got to be just ecstatic to get back on a stage somewhere.
Absolutely. To get back on a stage, and you know, we talked about this a year ago, that by the time things like the Muni came back and entertainment and these community events, that meant that the health landscape had significantly improved. So it is it's a breath of fresh air to go outside and smell that fresh air together, for sure.
One last question on the audience topic. masks. I think everybody's a little confused right now because a lot of places are saying we still want masks. Others are saying you can wear a mask if you're not vaccinated. If you're vaccinated, you don't have to. I would think being outside, that probably helps that a little bit. But where do you guys stand on that? Are you going to be asking people to show vaccination cards? What are we doing there?
No, we're standing pretty just in line with what the CDC guidance is, which is that if you're fully vaccinated, you don't need to wear a mask. If you're unvaccinated, you should wear a mask. But we're not verifying that, you know, what it is. The trust goes into the hands of the public and individual. Also understanding where that risk significantly lies for the individual who is unvaccinated. But, you know, we trust. There's a level of trust and responsibility that has to go to the individual in a situation like this. So we're following the CDC guidance on this, and that's how we'll proceed through the summer.
So Denny Regan retiring, and he hands you the opening of what is arguably the most uncertain season in 103 years. Did you thank him for that?
You know, I've thanked him for a lot of things. You know, he doesn't retire until December 31st, so we'll share this one. But, this process has been an incredible experience to see the resiliency of our team and of our company and of our staff to pivot to an at-home virtual season and to come back. So I'm excited and proud to take the reins of an organization that is fully equipped and ready to handle any situation like this.
All right. Kwovi Coleman, thank you for joining us here on KMOX.
Thank you so much, George. Have a good one.
And coming up on At Your Service, do you like steak? Do you like burgers? Have you gone shopping for any of those things lately? You had a heart attack if you were in the store recently at the butcher counter. We're going to have an expert from WashU telling us why we're suddenly spending so much money when we ask the question, where's the beef? Also coming up, a lot of things have changed since COVID-19 took place, obviously. The way we wear masks to the different places that we're going, the way we get into the places that we're going, all that sort of thing. We're going to talk about what of those changes are going to stay, what will go away soon, which ones do we think are in our best interest, and which ones maybe are in the company's best interest or somebody else. That coming up later on this hour as well. We'll want to hear from you when we get there. It's 314-436-7900 here in St. Louis, and if you're further out, 800-925-1120. We'll be back with all that and more here on KMOX.
Tuesday night, the Cleveland Indians come to town to take on our Redbirds. And you can hear it here. Ameren Pregame Show 620, First Pitch 715, on your voice of the St. Louis Cardinals, KMOX.
KMOX at your service. I'm George Sells with you all the way through till 11 o'clock tonight. I want to tell you a story. Yesterday, been a long day, busy day. I was thinking, I'm going to reward myself. We're going to have steak for dinner. Whole family. We're going to do steaks. I'm going to go get the steaks and grill them up. I walk into one of our local grocery chains. I walk up to the beef counter and I look down at the filet mignon, and that's an expensive cut. It's usually, you know, $18, $19 a pound, but you get smaller ones. It was $35 a pound. I almost lost my mind. I look at the butcher. He said, you know those hackers? Well, we know those hackers now. We sure do in my house. We ended up eating pork chops. And we're going to try to find out now exactly what happened in this whole mess. Joined now live by Panos Kavelis. He is the director of the Boeing Center for Supply Chain Innovation at Washington University in St. Louis. Mr. Kavelis, thank you very much for joining us tonight here on KMOX.
George, thank you for having me. I'm glad to help you with your question.
Well, let's start with the basics here. Your expertise is in supply chain. The big picture, according to my butcher at the local grocery, is that JBS packing company Hack is costing us all some money if we want to eat red meat.
Last week I would have believed that, but not this week. So it was only 2 days. It's not really the hack that drove up the prices so much. It's simply what the beef is eating. Probably the corn prices have to do with some of that, and the demand that has increased for the meat packers, in the sense of the restaurant business coming back.
Is that the situation? Because I was going to ask you how this all ties in. It all ties in with COVID-19 at some point. In this instance, are we talking about just a big hit to all of our wallets thanks to something that happened in the COVID world?
Well, it started at that point in time. The problem with that supply chain is the meat packers that are sitting in the middle is a highly concentrated industry. You have basically five large firms, JBS, Smithfield, and Tyson, and Cargill, and National Beef, more or less controlling that supply chain. And when they lost around 30%, 40% of their capacity during the COVID, that's where the problem started, and the prices started going up. But that more or less should have gone away by now if there were not other factors. So there were other things that started coming in. For chicken, the winter in Texas affected somewhat the chicken production. Then definitely the JBS cyber attack did not help at all. By the same time, corn prices and what we're feeding our animals have started going up, and that started coming into the supply chain.
So corn prices going up, good news for some farmers around here maybe, but not good news for the rest of us.
Not that good news for the rest of us, and a little of the distributors and some of the butchers pushing up a little the prices because they feel like there's money around to go.
And that was one thing I wanted to ask you, because we all get a little bit suspicious when there's some event that supposedly causes a price hike. At what point do you start looking at the butcher or maybe the distributor or the chain, whomever, and start thinking this should be gone by now? At this point, they're just gouging us.
At some point in time, I think this kind of prices or what you described, the price that you were describing, is not something that I expected. We expected it to go up a little. As we said last week, there were 2-3 days of a disruption, but we expected that the prices not to go up by much. So they can't almost double is what you're describing there. So that cannot persist. At this point in time, I don't see the conditions for those prices to persist through the summer.
So they don't go through the summer. When do you see this kind of thing dropping off? Is getting at least somewhere back to normal? I know that some of the forecasters have said beef prices would be up over the summer about 3%, and that was before the hack took place. So at what point do we feel like we should be able to expect a little more of a sense of normalcy?
I think the hack is more or less of an excuse. It was just a very short disruption for 2 days or so. So that should not be driving the prices up. As we said, the prices are driven up mostly by the commodities that are increasing. And, of course, the demand. I mean, we're all ready to go out there and eat at the restaurants. The demand has increased. That is driving the prices up. But it shouldn't go so high up. That's what I think. Simply the demand over the summer, of course, we all like to grill and barbecue and so on, is going to drive a little the prices. But the fall, you should not be paying those type of prices.
All righty. Well, Panos Kavelis from Washington University, we appreciate you taking the time with us this evening here on KMOX, and we'll all have to take our time at the grocery store, maybe do something a little bit different this weekend.
George, thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
A pleasure, sir. So if you're heading out to your favorite grocery to look for meat, you can look at last week's change, at least as far as I know, still sitting pretty high. Beef Central is one of the groups that monitors these sorts of prices. They reported that the price for boxed beef, which is kind of the lower standard unit of beef, went up about $3 in 1 week. The more choice cuts, $5.55 a pound was the increase between May 28th and June 1st. So hopefully we'll see that coming back down in the very near future because, boy, I can't wait for that steak. KMOX News Time is 8:40.
Trusted information, live and local. From the award-winning KMOX Newsroom.
A little Van Halen to brighten up your evening on this Monday night. KMOX at your service. I'm George Sells, 8:45 in downtown St. Louis. And I'm looking ahead now. I'm looking at all the things that have changed as far as policies at businesses, at events, thanks to COVID-19. And I'm wondering what's going to stay and what's going to go. Now, the last time we saw a situation like this where there were drastic changes made in a lot of places was coming after 9/11. I'm sure you remember before 9/11, we could go to the gate and meet our loved one at the airport right when they came off the plane. We never saw that happen again. Lots of different forms of security. The metal detectors that we used to only see at the airports, we now see at buildings of every shape and form, every sporting event we go to, all those sorts of things. And you know, searching the bags. That was new. That was something that came along after 9/11. They didn't used to search your bags when you went to the ball game or to a concert. Well, all of this has happened after 9/11, and it changed, and we just kind of accepted that this is what the new life is going to be like. Well, now here we are again, and lots of things have changed, and you wonder what's going to change back. Now, some are making a move. It was interesting. I was going to get on here and complain about the fact that I still couldn't get into the lobby of my bank, which so many other businesses, I mean, for crying out loud, the grocery store has had a person standing there waiting on you even at the height of the pandemic, and yet you couldn't go into a bank where there's not usually more than two or three customers anyway in the lobby anymore. Well, the bank that I go to announced that they're coming back online with a lobby come June 14th, I believe it is. So that's changing back. Good to know. But I was starting to wonder if they were taking advantage of those quiet moments to maybe cut down some staff. Then you've got commercial real estate. Think about this. Are you working from home right now? If you're working from home right now, your boss is not having to pay for the real estate in the place where you work, not having to pay the water bill, the electric bill, all those sorts of things, or at least not having to pay as much right away. And for them, that's a good thing. And I talked to a commercial real estate person a few months ago, just shooting the breeze. And he said that it is his belief that commercial real estate will be forever changed by this pandemic. Why? Because if you are running, say, a call center, calling people, soliciting them for whatever your business is, and you suddenly realize that everybody can stay at home. They can make the calls just as easily from there. All I have to provide them with is internet access and a computer, and they're off to the races. That's a lot of money to be saved. We know corporations love to save money, so you have to think that that is another one that is going to probably change it, to some degree or another. And then the one that got a lot of attention this weekend in particular, but it's been getting attention, but seem to hear a lot more talk about it. Busch Stadium, the bag policy at the Cardinal games. Apparently, and this is just quoting off of what I'd seen on social media. By the way, I'm at George Sells on Twitter if you want to chime in on this subject. And we'd also like to hear from you by phone here at KMOX, 314-436-7900. 314-436-7900 is the number here, 800-925-1120 if you live a little farther out. But a lot of people apparently were spotted, more women than men, walking back to their cars with a very disturbed, if not enraged, look on their faces because they were not allowed to bring a purse into the game or a little bag or a little cooler, whatever they happen to be carrying. Fanny packs are a no-go. They call them clutches, I believe, kind of a 6-inch by 8-inch limit. That is all that they are allowing into Major League Baseball games right now. Now, I spoke to someone over at the Cardinals, Matt Gifford, the vice president of stadium operations, earlier today, and he tells me that they're kind of following the lead of Major League Baseball. And by taking this approach, they're able to get people through the lines more quickly. They're able to maintain a no-contact policy, keep from spreading germs. Nobody's touching anything. You don't have stadium workers touching your stuff. They don't have to worry about touching your stuff. No touching, no spreading of germs. That's all very understandable. But what about the family that likes to go to the ball game? You know, husband, wife, two or three kids. And they like to bring a little cooler with them. The Cardinals, this is just a great tradition at Busch Stadium. The Cardinals have always been great at allowing you to bring a little small cooler and you can bring a few sodas as long as they're in the right kind of bottle. It's got to be plastic and they have to be sealed. You can bring some sandwiches from home. It's a way that a family of four or five can go to a ball game and not break the bank. Because let's face it, it could be pretty expensive if you make a trip to a concession stand with a couple of teenagers. I can tell you that firsthand. So that is a part that has people pretty upset in a lot of places. And I asked Matt about this. I said, what are we looking at long term? Is this something that's going to go away when we have full capacity, or is it going to be a little farther down the line? And his answer, quite frankly, is we just don't know yet. At this point in time, they just don't know how long they're going to go forward with this policy. And that is something that you have to wonder about because, okay, I'll play skeptic for a second. This is the total cynical former journalist routine here, but think about how much money those families who bring their coolers in are now going to be spending at the concession stand. And then multiply it by a few thousand, and then multiply it by 81 home games. And I was always taught never to do math on live radio or live television, and I'm not going to try to now. But you really do have to think that that's a good chunk of money. Now, when I asked Matt that question, he was very quick to point out to me that they just announced the dynamic deal that they're going to have for the Diamondbacks series and the Marlins series coming up in a couple of weeks. And for both those series, they're going to have $6 tickets, and you get a free Nathan's hot dog out of the deal. So they're trying to make up for some of it. They're absolutely working on that from that standpoint. But just the same, it is a situation where it could go on forever. It could be one of those things that will never change. Again, 314-436-7900 is the number. I want to know what you think. What do you think of the policy on bags, coolers, purses, all those sorts of things at Cardinals games? What do you think of some of these other things that are changing? And have you noticed anything that has changed that has gotten under your skin a little bit, or anyway, something that you want to see go away? Give us a call here. You can also try me on Twitter, at George Sells on Twitter. Deborah Johnson on Twitter telling me very simply, very quickly, very flatly, the purse policy needs to go. She is a big baseball fan. I see her on there every now and then. And there's one vote where the purses are just a no-go in that front. And it's funny because I remember you can go back to when they first instilled that NFL policy when the Rams were still here and they had to have the clear purses. What was that all about? They made a fortune selling those clear plastic purses with NFL logos on them. They were making a lot of money, and you had no choice in the matter, really. And that was really something to see. So on the line right now, Shelly calling from Ladue wanted to talk about the bag policy. Shelly, you're on the air with KMOX.
Bag policy, I don't get it. I don't understand how COVID really should drive the bag policy. Honestly, the thought of, I haven't gone to a game yet, and I don't know if I would want to. I think it's hard as a woman to think about not being able to carry anything, you know, besides maybe a phone in my pocket. Like, I just, that doesn't appeal to me. I don't know why they're not doing the clear bag thing that we all bought for, you know, like you mentioned, the Rams game or the Blues game. I bought a special purse for both of those where you can see everything, but at least I could carry things in. So, not a fan.
Frustrating? It sounds like you want to go to a ball game, and this is enough to turn you away?
It is. Honestly, I go to probably half the ball games normally, but and we'll see. You know, now it's getting ready to open up, and maybe I'll change my mind, and I'll get the fever of it. But it's a real turnoff to me to think, like, how am I going to carry things that I need, like carry money, carry my keys, carry my phone? Like, there's too many things that, I mean, I lighten up my purse when I go to a game, but there's things I need, and to think, like, I would have to bulk up in my pockets. It just doesn't sound appealing to me.
All right, Shelly, thanks for the call. Scott from St. Louis. Scott from St. Louis, you are on KMOX.
Yeah.
You there, Scott?
Hello. Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
So when you were talking about the meat prices earlier, what you're missing out on is the Packers have all gotten together, and they're really sticking it to the farmers. So the Packers right now are charging over $330 for boxed beef. Now, back in, I think it was 2012 when beef went up also, the highest it got was 280. At that time, the farmers were getting about 215 a pound for their fat cattle. Now they're getting $1.20 a pound for their fat cattle, and the packers are at 330 for beef.
So tough for the farmers at this point.
Oh, it's horrible. There's farms going under all over the place, and the packers are doing it. They're doing the same thing to the beef farmers they did to the pig farmers and the chicken farmers. They're trying to put them under so that they can take it over completely.
Okay, Scott from St. Louis, thank you very much for calling that. Of course, doubling back to our last segment where we were talking about that huge jump in beef prices, and Scott telling you that the place in the supply chain that is the problem may be the beef packers. That's also it was a large beef packing group that was hacked that led to at least some of this, so they say. But then we're back on the front with the purses and the bags. It sounds to me, especially after listening to that one call to Shelley, it sounds to me like the real big issue here, more than anything else, is going to be the purses. I know that my wife can't stand changing purses. It drives her crazy. It's inconvenient. It's a pain. You inevitably forget something, because that's how it always seems to go, is there's going to be something there that you're going to forget. And you know, I'm always ending up with a phone and a driver's license and a lipstick in my pocket when she can't keep it with her. But it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Again, no real clarity on when the bag policy might change, might go back to how it was, or if it'll go back to how it was. That is going to be something the Cardinals say they will be following the lead of Major League Baseball on. It is 8:56 on KMOX.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.